priority landscapes briefing by a group of people. Please come forward.
Good morning, Mr. Vice Chair and Commission. Thanks for having us here today. I'm Cynthia Wilkerson. I am the section manager for our land conservation and restoration section in our wildlife diversity division. And here I have with me also Eric Gardner, who's acting deputy associate director for wildlife program. And we're really pleased to be here to talk with you today about our statewide priority landscapes initiative. This body of work speaks to the importance of conserving Washington State's iconic landscapes in support of our agency mission. When I think about this work, I really think about the formative experiences that we've all had in these places throughout the state, whether it be hiking in the Olympic National Park or trout fishing on the Yakima River, big game hunting in the Blue Mountains, or bird watching in the Nisqually River Delta. And all of these experiences take, you know, a real conservative body of work to sustain those into the future. And protecting these iconic landscapes is critical to the maintenance of these places that that the people and fish and wildlife of Washington State call home. This Priority Landscapes Initiative is really about our efforts to work across partnerships to ensure that these landscapes will persist for the continued use and enjoyment of future generations. So we're going to give you a little orientation. This is a briefing on the initiative itself. We're going to start off with a very basic, what are landscapes and what do they have to do with Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife? What is landscape conservation? What is the Priority Landscapes Initiative? How will we be choosing priority landscapes? And examples of some existing efforts and next steps about where we're headed. So first, like I said, what are landscapes and what do they have to do with the Department of Fish and Wildlife? Well, we're all very familiar with our mission and our vision, and in Washington State, we are very blessed with great diversity, with over 100 ecological systems, 700 fish and wildlife species, and clearly we cannot, you know, take solely rely on a species-by-species approach to ensuring their persistence into the future and ability to meet our mission and vision. So landscapes offer organizing feature, basically, to look across systems address conservation at a broader scale. So there are many different ways to define landscapes. Ecologically, say the Columbia Plateau could be defined as a landscape. Topography and hydrology in terms of watersheds can be used to identify and define landscapes. Geopolitical definitions also are important. So at its core, really, a landscape is any meaningful unit that can allow for a coherent and shared understanding of a defined region. And the Free Dictionary tells us that a landscape is the expanse of scenery that can be seen from a single view. And ecologically, it's really important to note that landscapes are scalable and nestable, and that essentially they are large areas that consist of multiple interacting ecological components. The discipline of landscape ecology speaks to thousands of square miles. So really, when you reflect on, you know, my opening with regards to our ability to fulfill our mission and vision, this relies on the ability to ensure that these expanses of multiple interacting ecological components are conserved into the future. So with that, then what is landscape conservation? The Center for Large Landscape Conservation defines landscape conservation as working in partnership with local people and communities, large landscape, and connecting working lands, urban areas, and wildlands into whole, healthy landscapes that allow nature to flourish. On the ground, large landscape conservation means enhancing the conservation value of all lands, helping conserve key connections between landscapes, implementing climate adaptation initiatives, and developing strategies to help nature remain resilient on a grand scale. This word display basically takes all those words that I just said and kind of puts them in context to highlight really the key components of this work, which is partnerships and shared priorities. And again, clearly this is not something that we can accomplish on our own and requires incorporation of a broad scale and range of societal values. The combination of ecological, social, and political needs directs the needs and opportunities for partnerships to pursue shared priorities. And these societal values play a key role in defining the appropriate and relevant scale for an individual landscape conservation effort. So what is the statewide landscape, Priority Landscape Initiative? DFW and our partners have spent and invested heavily in landscape planning tools that inform these efforts. It's the intent of the Priority Landscapes Initiative to build upon those existing tools and efforts and to identify the priority places to focus our collective internal and external implementation efforts. This is not about creating a new tool, per se. It's about putting our existing tools to use on the ground through an integrated implementation effort both across the department as a whole and with our community, recreation, conservation, and working lands partners. So again, the focus really of this effort is on integrated implementation and that includes and allows for the incorporation of new science. It's focused on putting our knowledge into action on the ground. We're not about creating reports that sit on shelves. Ultimately, the approach will increase the effectiveness of our on-the-ground conservation and ability to deliver on our mission and vision for the state. So there are many different ways to implement landscape conservation, and this is the approach that we are utilizing in the Priority Landscapes Initiative. So there are two scales, the statewide scale and the actual landscape scale. So statewide, you know, we have a statewide prioritization team, which is cross-program, also includes significant contribution and engagement from the regions as well as headquarters. And we're working to develop and apply statewide prioritization criteria that will then lead to an identification of priority landscapes of conservation need. From there, at each landscape of identified as a landscape of conservation need, there's a similar type of process where we work to identify a cross-programmatic internal team and then marry that with an external partner team that works together to identify and convene key decision makers that are essential to the future of the landscape of issue, and that leads to a priority landscape collaborative. That group of people works together to apply landscape conservation design, basically to say, what do we care about, where does it exist, and what does it look like to preserve those values into the future, which then creates a conservation strategy for that priority landscape, which tells us what and where we need to be taking action on. And this is continued. So that that strategy also is then utilized to form the basis of an implementation plan, which tells you who, when, and how those actions are going to take place in those places. And there's obviously an adaptive management feedback component. As you move forward and implement, you learn from what you're doing and adjust accordingly. So this overall process is transferable in terms of its framework. So now, so how are we identifying statewide priority landscapes? This is an ongoing effort that really starts with the data that we have on hand, including these key landscape layers. So clearly, we rely on large intact blocks. We rely on the connectivity between the habitats of interest. We rely on ecological systems of concern, which are like species, also exist in a ranked system. that will inform our priorities. Our species of greatest conservation need, which I know you've heard about through our work on the State Wildlife Action Plan, and their locations and their needs and their priority habitats and species work, as well as understanding of the ecological integrity and status and condition of all of these things across the landscape. And all of these data are pulled together in an existing tool, the Crucial Habitat Assessment Tool, that we worked on in association with the Western Governors Association, and they are also being assimilated into our State Wildlife Action Plan. So while I don't have answers of specific priority landscapes for you quite yet, what I do have is kind of the general display of some of these important data layers to show you how they map out across the state. So we've got the large intact areas where you expect them on the crown of the Cascades there, and the Olympics. You've got the ecological systems of concern in red, our SGCN occurrences in purple, and the connectivity zones in swaths of brown between them. So again, this is a large-scale picture of the kind of information that's informing this decision. And then it's a very coarse scale. And then prioritization of the landscapes is additionally based on not just where these things are, but where we have concerns about them and where the threats are most likely to cause problems for our values. A very coarse filter surrogate for protection is public lands. And here you can see we just put a mask of gray, which again is a very coarse filter representation of where public lands exist and then where lands fall outside of that public land protection. And in this conversation, I really want to emphasize that priority landscapes will include public lands, certainly as a core component of their conservation, but also as in terms of the management of those lands being critical to the future of those places. So again, landscape conservation is based on looking at the big picture, including the interactions between management of lands in different ownerships. So this gives us a bit of a picture of some of the places we might be looking at. In terms of selecting the priority landscapes, we're really looking at a combination of these types of data, best professional judgment, and then our knowledge and awareness of sociopolitical readiness. So where are places across Washington State where there are communities and different stakeholders and different folks who are engaging with the future of fish and wildlife who are ready to have a conversation in this collaborative kind of way? So we're still discussing the potential categories for priority landscapes, but we've clearly acknowledged through our cross-programmatic team that there are some key categories, such as marine ecosystems, working lands, and urban interface areas, as well as ecological systems such as riparian areas, oak woodland forests, prairie ecosystems, and shrub steppe that are of interest. And we really kind of like the combination of the specific ecological systems and then the kinds of categories where we can emphasize that we want to maintain the future of these systems in the context that they live in terms of the working lands or urban human communities that are living around them and in them. So we'll be continuing this conversation with the goal of identifying a suite of statewide priority landscapes that we expect may be operating at different stages in the overall process I discussed. So just want to be clear that we understand that certainly the department is engaging in landscape-level conservation in various places. Once we have these priority landscapes, what will it mean to a priority landscape that they are one? So beyond the overall process that I outlined for each of the places, we will anticipate a variety of uses and direction evolving out of this effort, including conservation tools on private land, such as conservation easements, farm bill incentive programs, and technical assistance that aims to support the management of these lands consistent with habitat and species needs, and also allows for the continued land management consistent with the needs and desires of the private landowner. Habitat restoration efforts will be prioritized through this, to identify which actions are most needed and direct our collective resources towards getting that work done. In terms of habitat acquisition, both WDFW and our partners will work to prioritize and inform the prioritization through this effort, and the priorities will be defined excuse me, based on the shared outcomes of the internal and external collaborative body that we discussed earlier, and the priority landscapes process will support that conversation to identify when acquisition is an appropriate tool and where it is, who's the most logical owner. So it might be WDFW, it might be a land trust, it might be a different state agency, et cetera. Additionally, department will use priority landscapes tools to inform the management activities that happen on our wildlife areas, and we expect that our partner agencies will do the same on their lands as well. As I mentioned, there are certainly places where a collaborative landscape level approach is occurring in the state. A couple of examples that really come to mind include restoration in Puget Sound and work in the Yakima Basin that is aimed at providing for the needs of fish farms and families into the future. I wanted to highlight a couple of other examples to demonstrate the power of this approach. One is the Puget Sound Prairie Partnerships, the South Puget Sound Prairie Partnerships. So our prairie habitats, 90% of them have been lost. They are critical for maintaining the species listed here, including tailored checkerspot butterfly, Mazama pocket gopher, and streaked horned lark. And there's a quite large and concerted effort amongst a variety of partners, including the Department of Defense, centered around Joint Base Lewis-McChord, utilizing the Army Compatible Use Buffer Program, the Readiness Program, the Sentinel Lands. We were actually the first in the country identified as a Sentinel Landscape, whereas, you know, looking to provide tools through U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Natural Resource Conservation Service to maintain both the ecological integrity of this landscape as well as the working lands component and the military readiness component. Center for Natural Lands Management is a critical partner here. They were formally engaged as the Nature Conservancy and now are their own entity. Obviously, the Department of Natural Resources, and Thurston County is working as a key partner and actually working on a habitat conservation plan to meet the needs of these species and marry that with their development pressures and how across the landscape to meet those needs. And then even Wolf Haven has a small amount of prairie habitat that they are managing in concert with the overall landscape needs that this group has worked on. So I was going to show you a series of maps to kind of go through what has occurred to date because of this partnership. The ACUB process has, since 2006, has brought $16 million to the table for this effort, including 2,100 acres of land conserved through easements or acquisitions. The Army Compatible Use Buffer System program, which is a program nationwide where the adjacent uses to the Army installations are critical for them to be able to understand their ability to manage those lands into the future, both in terms of not being encroached on entirely so that they can continue their efforts, and also in specific, really relevant to this case, understanding how to manage the species there so that they can contribute to the conservation and that the species needs don't ultimately end up causing a problem for their ability to perform their duties. This process has led to an integrated habitat restoration approach that includes prescribed fire, invasive species control, native plant production and habitat enhancement, as well as species introductions, research, planning, and monitoring, and also includes using grazing as a restoration tool and to maintain working lands. So this map kind of shows you where all the critters are occurring across the landscape in 2006 and some of the key lands that are being managed for them and for their ecological integrity. And as we move through, you can see that we've added some species augmentations. We've got more species showing up in a variety of places highlighted by the circles, and also some new lands that have been acquired. Also, on this map in the northwest quadrant there, we have some work happening in Clallam County on the peninsula as well that has this same landscape. And then this is the future of where this vision is going in terms of species augmentation and land conservation. That's coordinated, and the department has been key in working with the Fish and Wildlife Service on a landscape reserve design that will drive this process and also inform the Thurston County HCP effort that I mentioned. So just overall, you know, this displays really the power of partnerships, not only in the investment through the Department of Defense, but also in our own state, our Washington Wildlife and Recreation Program funding that funds easements and acquisitions ranked the West Rocky Prairie edition, which is a DFW edition in this new inside the big green, inside the little blue circle, which would double our West Rocky Prairie wildlife area lands. And they ranked this project in their urban wildlife category as the number one project in the current cycle. And then the South Puget Sound Prairie Restoration proposal also ranked number one in the restoration category. And so that brings in quite a bit of funding to make these things happen. This body of work also led to avoiding of needing to list. It was used as part of the rationale to avoid listing the Mardon Skipper. And again, we're working with NRCS to develop best management practices for private landowners so they align with the species needs as well. It's a full complement landscape conservation effort. Another place that we have that may have jumped out at you in those maps that we looked at earlier is the shrub steppe landscape of eastern Washington. And these communities really form an iconic western landscape of open sagebrush plains, rimrock, and tumbleweeds. Some of this, many, many species that inhabit this shrub steppe can only be found in these semi-arid communities, including the greater sage grouse, sage sparrows, sage thrashes, and pygmy rabbits that are all among an elite group of species that's termed sagebrush obligates because they rely on them. And a host of other birds, mammals, reptiles, and insects are really found primarily in these communities. With all of that diversity, today less than 50% of Washington's historic shrub steppe remains, and much of that is degraded, fragmented, and or isolated from other similar habitats. So one effort that has emerged is the Washington Arid Lands Initiative, which represents a diverse assemblage of public, private, and tribal interests working together to conserve and restore a viable, well-connected system of eastern Washington's arid lands and fresh air and related freshwater habitats, sustaining native plant and animal communities and supporting compatible local economies and communities. So this group of folks you can see here, listed here, has worked together to develop a set of shared priorities, map them across the landscape, and prioritize places in need of conservation action, and then are now working to implement those actions. This work, this is the map that shows the priority places that need conservation action, and the implementation several efforts are NRCS has worked to identify and working to identify a grassland of special environmental significance through the Agriculture Conservation Easement Program, which would increase the amount of cost share that the agricultural community would receive through this program in these places. We're working with DNR and Fish and Wildlife Service on a candidate conservation agreement with assurances for the greater sage grouse, and it's being prioritized spatially through these efforts. The BLM, one of our federal partners in this landscape, has nominated the arid lands component as a healthy land focal area, which is a process by which they can receive funds and higher profile to maintain the healthy working landscapes there. And it's also informing mitigation discussions such as the transmission corridor from the Vantage to Pomona. So with that, just wanted to make sure you knew where we're heading from now. We've been working with the cross-program team to prioritize these priority landscapes. We're engaging with key stakeholders, including the Habitat and Recreation Lands Coordinating Forum, the Land Trust community, the Conservation Commission and Conservation District community, and we're going to be continuing that for a couple more months here and finalizing our overall approach in the spring. And the intent then is to integrate these priority landscapes into the State Wildlife Action Plan as you heard about that effort recently, and to develop the place-based collaboratives in the actual identified landscapes themselves, which is an ongoing effort. And then really, you know, as we're doing that, to integrate these efforts into ongoing work, such as including alignment with our Lands 2020 acquisition process, which you'll hear about shortly. So with that, I just wanted to leave you with this picture and thought from the Rogue River Valley of Oregon. I don't know how many of you know this story, but the Rogue River Valley had an effort where they gave community members tiles, and they asked them to depict what the Rogue River Valley means to them, and they put it on the tile, and then they put all of this together to make this large salmon from a landscape picture. And really, the statewide landscapes priority landscapes initiative is about assembling the pieces of good work that we have going on, and doing that, integrating that with the good work of all of our partners across the state to make sure that the efforts that we are doing are proactive and intentional and strategic and meet the needs of the future. So that's what I've got for you. Any questions?
Are there any questions? Mr. Keeney?
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I got that right.
You're doing good.
Thank you, Cynthia. That was very informative. And this really, to me, it's hopeful because there's so many places this can be put to work. You know, you mentioned NRCS and conservation districts. I'm sure a lot of organizations will, as this develops, will use this as a filter for applying for dollars from foundations and whatnot. So if it's a priority landscape, for instance, you'll probably get more points as you apply for different programs. I can also see the mechanism for getting farm bill dollars out into private lands often goes through Farm Service Agency, NRCS, but also it goes through a local work group process. Mm-hmm. So those local work groups, I've always felt, make decisions on where dollars are going to be spent kind of by who shows up at the meeting any given day. Mm-hmm. And so this would be a much better filter and tool to help, you know, help them be one tool to guide their direction and how, you know, major dollars get spent, you know, federal dollars in communities. From our standpoint, you know, our role is to approve land acquisitions and easements. And I've always felt, you know, most of the time, I don't know of any that we haven't approved in the many years that we've been doing this. And I'm not sure I'm not saying we should disapprove of them, but knowing where they stand and how they stack up to each other, and that they've come through a process that has vetted all these different aspects that you show, connectivity, and it's just excellent. You know, it seems like the only question we typically ask is, do the county commissioners approve of this? Mm-hmm. And if they do, it's okay, and if they don't, sometimes it's okay, but, you know, it seems like there should be a much more scientifically based process where a lot of different communities and efforts in federal and state are being filtered and backed by a landscape analysis. It just makes our job, I think, as a commission much more solid, much more backed up by what communities are saying, what they want, and the facts and the science. So really good presentation, and I think it makes it will make it a lot easier for us as a commission to make decisions.
Thank you.
I didn't have a question.
A great presentation, Commissioner.
Yeah, very nicely done. Good job. I guess in following up on that comment, I'd make an additional suggestion that one of our biggest challenges that we have had a very difficult time responding to very satisfactorily is the local opposition mm-hmm. to acquisitions mm-hmm. in those very counties in which a lot of our priority conservation objectives are identified. Mm-hmm. You know, this is we've put a lot of effort into this process of informing mm-hmm. the local elected officials, trying to work with them to reach more meeting of the minds mm-hmm. about the at least the justification for what we're doing. So I'm not saying that I expect miracles, but one of the things that I think might be worth pursuing is in connection with a conversation I had with Francine Madden, who is our conflict expert, our human conflict expert. We've brought in one of the other longstanding tough issues in Eastern Washington, wolf management and recovery. Yeah. She suggested that, you know, sometimes we don't bring to bear enough of the expertise in human conflict resolution, because we tend to be a department filled with wildlife or fisheries biologists. And someone has remarked that people that go into those fields are not really oriented towards understanding human beings and how you operate and how you might be able to overcome some of the conflicts. So the message is, you know, I think that it would be worthwhile to bring that perspective into your arena, because it actually is part of the same cultural divide, east and west. We're seeing it in wolves. We see it in land acquisitions and conservation and biological diversity concerns. So, you know, bringing in someone who could help along those lines, which means increasing our capacity to be good facilitators of conversations, is a good idea.
Yeah, I appreciate that and agree 100%.
I'd like to thank you for the nice picture of Thatcher Pass in the San Juan Islands. It makes me homesick. Having said that, we're just going to slide right into